Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. My name is Eric.
And my name is Mac. And for this episode, we were trying to think of, what's going to be a fun topic to discuss. And I had a random old memory pop into my head involving our good friend, Bob.
Bob Lover.
He's the sweetest, funniest dude.
Bob's the shit.
But he's the greatest. But I don't know. I can't remember when this happened. I can't remember the song that was playing. I remember me and Bob were hanging out. Whatever song is on. And he's sitting there playing the air bass. And of course, he's nailing every chord, even though I don't think he's ever picked up a bass.
Right.
But air bass, like he's killing it. And he's just calmly looking around. He looks over at me and he goes, you know, you don't see too many people playing the air bass.
Astute observation on Bob's part. That is entirely true.
Very true.
Everybody air guitars, everybody air drums. Rarely see the air bassist.
Right. So that's what we wanted to do an episode dedicated to those that slap the bass.
you had to work that line in there, didn't you?
If you haven't seen I Love You, Man,
it's a great movie.
So we want to focus on iconic bass lines.
Yes, iconic bass lines. Again, like episodes in the past, we're not saying these are the best bass lines. Again, we don't like to go down that road again. We'll leave that to Rolling Stone. This is what we think is iconic, what we want to talk about, what we find fun, what we find interesting.
And just to get it out there, we want to, you're not going to be hearing any Rush or Geddy Lee in this episode. Not because we don't respect them and love them. It's just because there's a million podcast episodes out there about Rush and Geddy Lee.
100%.
And they would do a much better job analyzing those songs than we would. So all due respect to Rush and Geddy.
Yeah.
We love you. It's just, we're going to go a little bit beyond that in this episode.
Yes, our amazing progressive neighbors from the north. We love them. But we're not going to talk about Rush today.
Exactly. And we're going to pass on our two of our all-time favorites, Peace Sells by Megadeth and For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica.
Right.
But we're going to pass on those and we're going to just go in a little bit deeper and a little bit broader on this one.
Yeah, we're going to ignore the low-hanging fruit for a change. Well, again, now that I said that, some of mine are kind of obvious, but I think I got at least a few in here that are might raise an eyebrow and go, oh, shit, I didn't think about that. Or, maybe I'll turn somebody into a song they're not even familiar with.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, how are we going to start this one off tonight, Mac? You want to go first?
I'll jump in.
All right, cool.
I'm going to jump in with just one of the funkiest, catchiest bass lines ever recorded. And it's Super Freak by Rick James.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, it's nonstop groove. And, I read Rick wanted to write a song that white people could dance to. Well, Rick, mission accomplished.
I think a more realistic goal for Rick would have been songs that white people will try to dance to, I think. Because I think ultimately that's what he did. I don't know if any of us are really dancing. We're all trying really hard.
We're trying super hard. But thanks to Super Freak and Rick James, it's a little bit easier.
Right, exactly.
But from the second that song kicks in, man, you hear that bass groove and you're hooked. You're hooked. It's just, it's simple, but it's brilliant. It carries the song. And, a lot of times you don't even know you're hearing a bass line or a bass groove. You're just, but that is just solid bass guitar work right there.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many from that era too. I'm going to touch on some, but so much great bass playing that came out of that, the mid to late 70s and into the 80s and that funk genre. And, it kind of bled into disco a bit and so many great bass lines from that era.
And obviously it became one of the most famous samples in the world with MC Hammer's You Can't Touch This in 1990, that bass line just lives on forever. It's a work of art.
And so does Rick James. Thank you, Dave Chappelle.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dave Chappelle. Well, that's what I'm coming right out of the gate. I'm coming out with Rick James, starting this off with something funky.
A fine, fine choice, man. I do love that song. I do love that song. Mine is not too far removed from that. The first one I'm going to talk about today from 1979. The song is Good Times by Chic. Nice, massive, dude. Massive hit for Chic. It was from their album Risqué. And the bass line was recorded by a gentleman by the name of Bernard Edwards. He was a member of Chic from its inception in 1976 to about 1983. Started the band with Nile Rodgers. Monster bass player. That goes without saying. But this guy's career went beyond just Chic. I mean, this guy wrote and produced music for artists such as Diana Ross, Debbie Harry, Sister Sledge, Johnny Mathis. Yeah, that's right. The guy who played bass for Chic wrote and produced music for Johnny Mathis.
Tiny Bubbles.
That's pretty sweet. And probably, in my opinion, one of his greatest achievements was he played a pivotal role in creating the band The Power Station. Do you remember Power Station?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
dude.
Robert Palmer
on vocals, Andy and John Taylor from Duran Duran, and Tony Thompson on drums, who was Bernard's bandmate in Chic. Tony Thompson played drums in Chic before The Power Station. So he had written and produced, you know, music with them as well, produced their first record. And another fun fact, his son, Bernard Edwards Jr., goes by the name of Focus. He is also a producer and making a hell of a living for himself. He's worked with J-Lo, Beyonce, Busta Rhymes. He's got a pretty impressive resume himself. Damn. So,
dude, those are fun facts.
You know I'm bringing the fun facts, man, at least once or twice an episode. That's what I'm here for.
No, but that is an excellent pick. That's a great song.
Oh, everyone knows such it. Everybody an iconic loves bass line.
It. Hey, speaking of that bass line.
Yeah.
Good Times by Chic.
Mm-hmm.
That bass line inspired my next pick.
Beautiful.
That was the inspiration for John Deacon's bass line in Another One Bites the Dust by Queen. Now that's a groovy ass bass line.
That
right
is,
there.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you look up groovy ass bass lines, it's yeah, will say.
Pretty sure.
John Deacon's
bass line. Yeah, from the, you know, the 1980 album, The Game. I mean, it was one of the first albums I owned. I remember having
that. Oh, game. Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's cool.
But just fun, funky. They wanted a disco hit, Queen did. They wanted to write something people could dance to, and man, they succeeded. I mean, that is a home run.
Absolutely, man.
This is kind of a tie for me with John Deacon, or Deaky, as he was referred to by his bandmates. Yes. But you can't mention John Deacon without mentioning Under Pressure.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and that bass line, the song that maybe wasn't even supposed to be. You know, Queen was recording in Switzerland in 1981. Bowie happened to be there recording as well at the same studio. And that pieces of that bass line were part of another song that wasn't quite working out for Queen. They hook up with Bowie and they come up with this idea, and the bass line works. And you have one of the coolest bass lines ever, one of the greatest songs ever. I love that song. So,
yeah, same. Same.
Yeah, the bass line for Under Pressure just can't be topped.
And that's a pairing of, you know, two of my gods as well, too, man. Huge Queen fan, huge David Bowie fan. So,
yeah.
Them doing a song together, of course, it was brilliant.
Yeah. And you can't mention Under Pressure without mentioning Ice Ice Baby. I mean, come on.
But it was different because they added that one note at the end. Remember that interview? Right, yeah. Like, shut up, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
Rob Van Winkle. You're not fooling anybody.
I mean, come on. We all still love the song Ice Ice Baby. But,
oh, of course, dude. Are you kidding me? I even love the stupid nu metal remake that he did in the 90s. Remember that one?
Yeah.
That was great, too.
I'll listen to that song all day. I mean, hey, I'm not ashamed.
Nice. Well, again, man, you can never go wrong with Queen. So another fine choice, my friend.
Yes. Thank you. What do you got?
All right. I'm going to go back to 1973 on this one, a band that I'm a huge fan of. They can be a little polarizing. Some people, you just don't get it. Other people are just like fanatical about this band. But I'm talking about Pink Floyd. And the bass line to Money is just so iconic. It's one of the stranger pop rock songs that ever had radio play because it's in a weird time signature. Mm-hmm. If you're not a musician or if you don't, you know, you've never really paid close attention, the song is in 7/4 time. Most 99% of your rock and pop music is in 4/4. 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 3, 4, 4, 4, 4, 4. This is in 7/4. So it's a weird time signature, which gives it this kind of weird, if you're tapping your foot to it, you're kind of like, wait, what just happened? You didn't lose time, but it can mess you up. And again, yeah, just one of the very few songs that ever got, you know, radio play and made it really big. As a matter of fact, it was the song that really catapulted them from a sort of underground art rock kind of band to like major, major status. It was on their biggest album, Dark Side of the Moon. Still to this day, just one of the greatest records of all time.
No doubt.
Yeah. And of course, played by the great Roger Waters, played the bass line on that. Mm-hmm. And Money, just Pink Floyd, again, you can't go wrong. Just their whole catalog's just amazing. Some of the earlier stuff, can be a little off-putting. It's a little weird, very experimental. Yeah, yeah. But man, when they locked in, man, they were amazing. Such a great band.
Yeah, right. Right on, man. That's a great song. You're right. From Dark Side of the Moon, I mean, you can't beat that album.
No, it's unreal.
All right. You just got a little weird with Pink Floyd. Let's get a little bit weirder.
Okay.
All right. We're going to go to 1993. A little band by the name of Primus.
Oh, I knew you were going to have Primus on your list, dude. I knew it.
Yes. And Les Claypool, the bass player and vocalist.
Yeah.
But the song is My Name is Mutt.
Dude.
I mean, that slap bass. Just, you know, the intro and this, it rides through the whole song. And it's a 6-string bass.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. It's so just, you can feel it in your chest.
You really
the whole song. It's incredible. And of course, the song's hilarious and creepy and weird. And, you know, about two guys, just a couple of tweakers who, you know, hanging out, get into a fight, and one ends up killing the other
kills
one.
Kills the other one. You know, just your typical Primus song.
Yeah. But I love Les Claypool. You know, I love Primus. Always have. I mean, I could have picked several Primus songs to put on. You know, Jerry was Tommy a racecar driver, Tommy the Cat, Winona's Big Brown Beaver, sure. John the Fisherman, Too Many Puppies. Like, I mean, it's just every bass line is iconic pretty much. But
for sure,
if I had to pick one that most people know, or that could, if you don't know, could really suck you into becoming a Primus fan.
Or scaring you to death and send you running, one or the other.
I kissed him upside the head with that aluminum baseball bat.
Oh, my God. Dude, and I remember the first time hearing Primus, too, and just going, what the hell is that guy doing? I mean, an insane bass player, clearly. But I had never heard a bass with strings that loose before. I mean, you're hearing... As they reverberate, they're smacking against the neck of the bass and everything, and they're just slopping around. I'd never heard that sound before, but yeah, I was instantly hooked, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just the name of that album, Pork Soda.
Pork Soda.
Everything. I just love Primus, man. Just get weird, stay weird. I love it.
Yeah. All right. Well, my next one's not as goofy. It can be it's definitely got its own thing going on, but definitely not they're goofy is not this band at all. My next pick is Rage Against the Machine, Killing in the Name of.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing goofy about that song whatsoever. it's from their self-titled debut album, came out in 1992, and played by the great Tim Comerford, also known as Timmy C. Rippin' bass player. Mm. I know that Tom Morello is an amazing guitar player, and he's an innovator, and he invented techniques that just blew people away. Nobody'd seen a guitar player like that before. That's all awesome. But God damn it, that rhythm section needs way more praise than they get, man. I know we talked about this band in the past a little bit, but my God, they're just that rhythm section is so great.
They are incredible, like I said, as a rhythm section, and Timmy C is just, he just holds down such a groove.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, like right now, like there's a lot of questions going on about Rage,
right?
And I just saw an interview with Timmy C where he's like, I don't know, man, I'm just the bass player, I'm the lowest on the totem pole. Like, bro, no man, that band, without you there's no groove in that band.
There's really not.
Sell yourself short, dude.
Yeah, he and Brad will make up just one of the greatest rock rhythm sections ever. And again, I don't think they get the recognition that they deserve. But Rage Against the Machine, no joke whatsoever. All their stuff is great. But that was kind of the one that put them on the map, too. And again, that bass line is just the second you hear it, you know who it is, and you recognize that tone immediately. So yeah, Killing in the Name of, Rage Against the Machine. If you don't know it, where you been?
Yeah. Well, on that, I'm going to pick up. Now, this is a completely left turn from Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, I like
but
it.
But one of the, just the best, this just makes people happy. The second you hear, bum, 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 right? My Girl by The Temptations. I mean, such a strong and sweet bass line. That guitar riff kicks in, and then I've Got Sunshine. Everybody knows it. It just makes you happy. But it's just a phenomenal bass line all the way through. And it was written by Smokey Robinson and Ronald White from The Miracles, but it was The Temptations' first number one single in the U.S. And Smokey's inspiration for writing My Girl was his wife, and the song was included on The Temptations' 1965 album, The Temptations Sing Smokey, which I have that album.
Are you serious?
I have that left over from my dad's collection.
Dude, you just came in to brag tonight, man. I see where this is going. I'm just going to rub all this shit in my face. Yeah, I have the original pressing on vinyl. Jerk. That's cool, man. That's a good get right there.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, if you can find somebody that doesn't dig that bass line and doesn't love that song, you know, I congratulations, because I've yet to meet anybody that can not resist that bass line.
Yeah, 100%. And it's the beauty of that bass line too is it's very simple, but it's just so perfect, you know, and just the prettiest little melody, and just it's the perfect bass line. So good.
Instantly recognizable.
Yeah, 100%. Great pick, dude.
All right, man. What do you got? What's next?
Borrow that vinyl one day.
Yeah, right on.
All right. This next one is I'm gonna stay in the same sort of era as my last pick of Rage Against the Machine. This is from 1991. Another one of those instantly recognizable bass sounds, style. This song in particular is kind of if you know one song by this band, it's probably this song. They've had many hits, but I'm talking about Give It Away by the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Yes, dude, indeed. That bass line in the beginning, dude. And in the beginning, that bass line just goes through the entire song. But it's just so sweet the way he slides up the neck. And of course, you know, Chad Smith's thunderous drumming on that fucking song, dude. That dude hits so goddamn hard. I've always been a big fan of his. Of course, Tony's vocals and John Frusciante on guitar. That's the classic lineup of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And everybody's doing their thing and throwing it down on that track, but there's no denying like what makes that song is that bass line.
Yeah, 100%. That bass line is the song.
And Flea, just a monster.
Oh,
just God. So sick. Fun fact about Flea, started as a trumpet player.
Yes.
Isn't that crazy?
He's still like a solid trumpet player.
Yeah. He turns up on like other people's albums sometimes. He plays trumpet on some Jane's Addiction records. And I think he's done some stuff with Fishbone. So I mean, still break out the horn every once in a while. But
yeah, that's awesome, man. Flea is just one of the, you know, I mean, if you had to do a top five or a top 10, Flea's in there.
He's definitely up there, dude. And just an amazing entertainer, too. So much fun to watch. So much energy on stage. Still, he's like probably, 60?
Something like that,
I mean, just and still just going bananas on stage and running around, jumping around, getting naked, just whatever. Yeah. He's awesome, man. Flea's great.
Doesn't own any shirts. You know,
right, exactly. All right, what you got next for me, man?
I'm going to 1987.
Okay.
Coming out of L.A. The Appetite for Destruction album. Rocket Queen by Guns N' Roses.
Yes, dude.
Oh, what a monster. Monster bass line. That is Duff McKagan just laying it down, man. Just, so good.
Yeah, Duff rules, dude.
And I don't think Duff gets enough recognition.
I agree.
For his signature sound, you know, but also what it meant to the overall sound of Guns N' Roses. Because you listen to, like, you go through all those tracks on Appetite, and you hear Duff. You hear that bass.
He cuts through.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of bass players, you know, just kind of like lay in the back and just kind of lay down in some bottom. But you hear him coming through. And that's not necessarily something that was done a lot, like coming out of that era in the 80s. You know, when you're talking about like sort of the, you know, the quote hair metal bands.
Yeah.
You know, bass player wasn't necessarily a featured player, so to speak. But Duff just lays it down on that track. And it's just an incredible bass line.
It really is, man. Duff's always been possibly my favorite member of Guns N' Roses too. He just, being a drummer, you'd think I'd say, you know, Steven Adler and Matt Sorum, but I don't know, man. Duff he's so fucking cool. First of all, he's one of those people that even back then when he was a sloppy, drugged out, drunk maniac, he still somehow just oozed coolness. And today, clean and sober, back with Guns N' Roses, still fucking just one of the coolest people in the room anywhere he goes, man. So just.
Right.
Always loved Duff, but I love his playing. I don't know if it's his punk rock background. I don't know if it's his tone or just his other influences. He just has a style, man, and I've always, always loved. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's always creating. I mean, outside of Guns, he's got like three or four, you know, projects going all the time where he's always making music and creating art. So just love Duff McKagan.
Yeah. Yeah. Super smart dude too.
Yeah. Yeah. And books. I mean, dude, he survived his fucking pancreas exploding. I mean,
I mean, there's not a lot of people on this planet that can say that, dude. Yeah. And the inspiration for Duff Beer on The Simpsons. So there you go. All right.
Right on, man. Where are we going to next?
I'm going to go back to the 70s, man. I'm bouncing all around here on the timeline. But I love this song. And when we first came up with the idea to do, you know, iconic bass lines, this is one of the first ones that popped into my head. I'm talking about the song Roundabout by Yes.
Oh.
From 1971, so we're going back a ways. Mm-hmm. It was off their fourth studio album called Fragile. And the bass player's name is Chris Squire. He's one of the founding members and one of the contributing songwriters and just monster, monster bass player. Everybody in that band were amazing musicians. I mean, they were in that whole prog rock thing. You can't play that kind of music and not just be a stellar fucking player. These guys were all top notch. But you want to hear just ripping bass playing, man. Listen to Roundabout, man. That should be your like gateway to Yes. It was one of their biggest songs. And the bass line in that just, it smokes, dude. It's so, so good, man. And so flawless. Right. There's so many notes in that bass line and he's playing so fast. And to listen to it, and if you see live footage or whatever of him playing it, he does it so effortlessly, man. It just make you go, God damn.
Because, yeah, like you said, even if you're not a fan of, you know, that, you know, progressive rock, or you're not a fan of Yes, okay, but, dude, check out that bass line. Like, yeah. Go listen to that song and tell me it doesn't rip.
Yeah, it smokes, man. It's pretty amazing.
Awesome, awesome. Dude, we are all over the place on this.
I know, big time, right?
I know. So the next song I'm going to bring up, I got to give a shout out to my boy Alan. Sweet Emotion by Aerosmith.
Oh, yeah,
what
dude.
A bass line. Tom Hamilton, 1975, Toys in the Attic. You want to talk iconic and just groove. Like, you've seen Aerosmith live, right? So
many times, yeah.
You know, it's been a while since I've seen him, but I, you know, when I did see him, that intro, they held that intro a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And it's just Tom on stage underneath a red light, just laying down that bass line, man. And it's just so damn cool. Like, it's just one of the coolest bass lines you're going to hear ever. I just love it.
Yeah, dude. Talk about another band with an amazing rhythm section.
Yeah.
I mean, him and Joey Kramer, just so good. You mentioned, you know, it's from the album Toys in the Attic. My favorite Aerosmith album.
Yeah.
It's one of those albums, too, where you're like, oh, wow, I know this one. Oh, I know this one. I know this one. It's got a bunch of hits. But for the simple fact that it opens with Toys in the Attic, that might be my favorite Aerosmith song of all time. And it opens with that. But Sweet Emotion, really, really great playing. But again, it's that hook. It's just such a great bass line. They should play it for 10 minutes every night before they actually launch into the song.
Yeah, I could just put that on a loop and I could just listen to it forever. Yeah, just the intro.
That's cool, man. Yeah, that's a good choice. I kind of had forgotten about that one, man. That's why I love doing these like comparison lists. You know, I bring in a bunch, you bring in a bunch, and then, you know, we just nerd out over, oh man, I can't believe I didn't think of that one. All right. I'm going to bring it back to the 80s. I'm not even sure if I've been to the 80s yet. I've definitely been to the 70s. I was definitely in the 90s. I think this might be my first venture into the 80s. But 1982, there's an artist you might have heard of, a guy by the name of Michael Jackson.
That's ringing a bell.
Dude, Billie Jean,
oh,
another one of those songs, man. You don't even have to be a big Michael Jackson fan. That song is iconic.
Yep.
And part of the reason, that bass line, man, that just strolling, it's so catchy. You know, sets the tone for the song right out of the gate. Again, that was the song that launched him into the stratosphere. He was doing well. I mean, he had Off the Wall and, you know, had some hits off of that, but he became Michael Jackson, I think, when Billie Jean came out. It's from the 1982 album Thriller, which, again, you might have heard of it. It had a couple of hits on it.
Yeah, just one or two.
Yeah. Bass player on that track was a guy by the name of Louis Johnson. He was in the Brothers Johnson. That's where his Quincy connection, of course, Quincy Jones produced Thriller. So a lot of people that were in Quincy's camp and you know, had worked with him over the years got pulled in for these studio sessions. And that's why Louis Johnson got the gig, you know, playing on Michael Jackson's Thriller. He actually played on three Michael Jackson records. He played on Off the Wall in 1979, and then he played in Thriller in 1982. and then rejoin the camp again for Dangerous 1991. So, you know, I think he made a couple bucks working with Michael Jackson over the years. Iconic bass line, amazing bass player. Unfortunately, lost him in 2015, passed away. But this guy had worked with people like Aretha Franklin, Billy Preston, Michael McDonald, just amazing session guy. And again, yeah, just played one of the most iconic bass lines of all time, Billie Jean.
Yeah, another one you can't deny the second you hear
it. It's a monster.
You know, you remember the video, you remember everything, and it's just,
yeah,
it's perfect.
All right. So what's next, Mac?
We're going to go back.
How far are we going back?
We're going way back. We're going back to 1969.
Okay.
Sly and the Family Stone. Dude. Thank you for letting me be myself again.
One of the greatest titles of a song as well.
The misspelling.
Yeah. It's, spelling. It's all one run-on word.
For letting me be myself again. But that opening bass line, just you hear it and you know it
instantly,
and it instantly recognizable. But it fits in the song. Just the way the whole song flows, it's the perfect bass line. Bassist Larry Graham was actually like credited with introducing, you know, the slap technique.
No shit.
On bass, you know, played throughout that track. Like, he's the guy that people are saying that he's the guy that kind of started the whole slap.
Oh, that's cool.
Electric bass. That's cool.
Hell yeah.
But I just grew up, you know, listening to, you know, my dad's Sly and the Family Stone album. So I was always a fan. So I've been hearing that bass line my entire life. So, but yeah, just incredible work by Larry Graham and Sly is, you know, Sly, man. He's just the best.
Yeah. They were the best, dude. They were so good.
And I read this on the internet, so it has to be true.
Of course.
But bassist Larry Graham is also the uncle of Drake.
No shit.
Yeah. There you go. Fun fact.
Mac coming with the fun facts. We could have like a fun fact sound effect that we just fire off every time one of us does that. I'll come up with something.
It'd be like Brian Johnson from AC/DC going fire, and then the cannons go off.
Yeah, it'll be our thing, our version of that.
Yeah.
All right. So you were what, 69, you said? I'm going up to 71 by The Doors.
Ooh.
The song is Riders on the Storm.
Oh, my God. What a riff.
It really is. I mean, the whole song's amazing, but one of the greatest intros. What's kind of ironic about that choice is The Doors didn't have a bass player.
Right.
I mean, they didn't have an official bass player. It was Ray Manzarek on keys, and he would play, forgive me, I'm not a keyboard player, but it was like a double-decker keyboard, and his left hand would be playing the bass lines on the lower keyboard, and his right hand would be playing the melodies on the upper keyboard, and that's how they filled in the bottom end without a bass player on stage. That said, they would write songs in that fashion. When it came time to record albums, many times they would bring in an actual bass player to play these parts so that it sounded more like a bass. And so that is the case with Riders on the Storm. It was played by a gentleman by the name of Jerry Sheff before The Doors, during his stint recording with The Doors. He was actually best known for playing with Elvis Presley's band. He was part of the he was part of the TCB band from 1969 to 1977. So yeah, the dude already had a pretty sweet career going, but this guy, again, talk about a guy with a discography of fucking mile long, dude. This guy has played with, obviously, like I said, Elvis Presley. He's recorded with The Doors. He's played with Johnny Cash, Todd Rundgren, Crowded House, everyone's favorite Juice Newton. He recorded with Juice Newton.
Playing with the Queen of Hearts?
Hell yeah. I don't know if he's on that track, but he played with Juice Newton. As a matter of fact, he recorded with her as recently as 2012. So, I mean, the guy is still active. He's like 81 or 82 years old. I forget what his actual, but he's in his 80s. Currently lives in Texas, still travels, still plays music. I'm like, dude, this guy's my fucking hero, man.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah,
that's a cool.
That's impressive.
That's a cool dude.
Yeah. I just reveling in that. I'm thinking about that bass line in my head. Just, I love The Doors.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of people I know, they're like the love or hate.
Yeah, they are. They're one of those. You know,
but I love The Doors, man. I can listen to them anytime.
Same here.
Okay. Let's fast forward to 1993.
Okay.
from the album Last Splash.
Oh, nice.
The Breeders, and the song is Cannonball. Just a sweet, sweet, funky bass line throughout the entire song. It starts the song, yeah, and it carries through the song. Written by Kim Deal, who also happened to be, she's the original bassist for the Pixies.
Yep.
But she played guitar and sang vocals on Cannonball, and Josephine Wiggs played bass in The Breeders. But just, that's another one that I hear that first note, and I'm just, okay, I'm in. I'm just, this is what I'm going to do for the next 3 minutes and change, is just sit here and enjoy the hell out of this bass line.
And that song was really, I mean, it was big in its day, man. I mean, that I remember that being on, you know, rock radio, alternative rock radio. It was on MTV every 10 minutes. Like, that was a big, big song for them.
But yeah, so just, yeah, great band, great, great song, and just I'll forever love that
bass line. Killer, killer bass line, man.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go back again to the 80s. This time we're going to dip our toe in the hip hop waters, the early days of hip hop and rap music.
All right.
Yeah, a little song by the name of White Lines, Don't Do It,
bass,
by Melly Mel, sometimes billed as Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel. It's a whole long story, but basically the track was a Melly Mel track. Grandmaster Flash was on it, but by the time the song came out, he was suing Sugar Hill Records. So some sources have it listed as Grandmaster Flash and Melly Mel. Some call it just Melly Mel. Very weird, convoluted story, but yeah, that's the story.
That's excellent, man. That, you're right. That is just an unmistakable groove in that song.
Yep. Yeah, it was played by Doug Wimbish, and if you're familiar with Doug, he's a monster session player. He's played with a lot of people. He played with the Rolling Stones. He actually toured with them. He recorded with Mick Jagger, Depeche Mode. He's done some work with James Brown, Annie Lennox, Billy Idol. I mean, he's another one that's got a monster list. But he is currently the bass player since 1992 of Living Colour.
Oh, yep. No shit.
In 92, when the original bass player Muzz Skillings left the band, Doug Wimbish joined, and has been the bass player ever since. So even with all these other projects going on, when Living Colour gets together, records, goes on tour, whatever, he's the guy. He's had a pretty amazing career too, man. But yeah, just starting off, and he was so young when they were doing those Sugar Hill records. But yeah, man, he's the guy. So if you go see Living Colour, who's on tour right now, if you go see them, the bass player that you're watching is the guy that plays White Lines, man. That's fucking cool.
That's awesome, man. That's a great tune.
Hell
man.
Yeah. It's amazing.
All right. We continue on slapping the bass.
I was wondering if you were going to work it in at least one more time.
All right. We're going to go way back again. We're going to go back to 1967.
Okay.
And Sunshine of Your Love by Cream. Just phenomenal bass line, Jack Bruce. Yeah. And what's interesting about this, and I guess I hadn't thought about it, you know, in a long time until, you know, just doing a little bit of research and thinking about how Hendrix influenced that bass line. Because the song is built around that bass line. And the band had gone to see Hendrix, you know, in London in 1967. And that's what inspired Jack Bruce to write that bass line. And if you think about that song now through that lens, it's got a very Hendrix-y feel to it.
It really does.
Yeah. It's so strong. It drives the song. I just always love that bass line. And one of my favorite scenes from Goodfellas, you know, the camera's kind of slowly moving in on De Niro.
Yeah.
That bass line kicks in and he's smoking that cigarette and he's just got that look on his face, man. It's the perfect song for that movie and that scene.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
But hey, Cream, Sunshine Your Love, that bass line is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and again, man, all just monster players, man.
Yeah,
that band was sick. That band was sick.
Right. Clapton, Ginger Baker. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Nice. Good choice, man. I'm going to stay around. What year was that? That was
67.
All right. I'm going to bring it up to 1969 on my next one. Again, little band, might have heard of, called Led Zeppelin. I'm talking about Ramble On. Yes. Led Zeppelin 2 was the album, and of course, played by the great John Paul Jones. We had talked earlier about some other artists, how we felt like they were kind of overshadowed in their bands, and these guys are amazing players. And, like, you know, even the last episode, we were talking about Charlie Watts and how, like, most people don't name him as the first guy you think of when you think of the Rolling Stones, but he was one of the most monstrous drummers. And this is the same situation. I mean, John Paul Jones, probably the least well-known name of the four guys in Led Zeppelin, and was just one of the sickest fucking musicians, man. If he was just an amazing bass player as he was, you'd be like, wow, great. That's a talented fucking dude. This guy played keys. This guy wrote, he played mandolin. He played all these different string instruments. The guy's just unreal, man. So again, I don't think, you know, he's crying in his Cheerios every morning that he's underappreciated. I'm sure he's a very wealthy man from the Led Zeppelin royalties, but just ripping bass player. And Ramble On is just, again, it's kind of like that Yes track where, like, you just go back and just focus on the bass. Just forget everything else. It's got some wacky ass lyrics about Lord of the Rings and stuff. It's kind of a weird song.
Yeah, right.
Lyrically, it's kind of a weird song. and it's kind of folky at times and rock at times. It's weird. But just focus on the bass, man. And wow, John Paul Jones just, again, man, puts on a clinic in that track.
Yeah, dude, I love John Paul Jones. Amazing. I mean, just, yeah, you could name how many other, you know, Zeppelin tracks. Oh my God,
I could have done a whole list of amazing bass lines just from Zeppelin.
Yeah, that intro, to how many more times? Or
Gallows Pole, that bass line in Gallows Pole.
Yes, such a talented guy, and just, you know, again, maybe a little underappreciated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right, what you got next, man?
I got my final pick here.
Okay.
An album called Dookie from a little band called Green Day.
Nice.
And the song, is Longview. Just, I mean, hey, that opening bass riff, man, Mike Dirnt, you hear that, and it's just, again, it's a signature sound. Like, you know immediately when you hear that song, that bass line, rather, you know what song it is, you know what's coming. But it's super catchy and fun. He wrote that riff high on LSD, so, hey, I mean, good for you.
Sure.
I mean, I don't know. I've never done LSD, but I can't imagine me doing anything more than just, like, staring at the wall on LSD.
No, I was going to say real quick, I'd be willing to bet a good chunk of the songs we're talking about today were written on some form of recreational drug. A lot of these are from the 60s and 70s, man. There was some shit going on.
Yeah, very, very possible. But you take that great bass line and you throw in some, you know, some super punk rock lyrics about doing nothing and masturbating until it's boring.
Right.
And then, you know, you've got yourself a hit song right there.
Hell yeah, absolutely. That's great. I never heard that story about him writing it, but whacked out. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. But I mean, you think about it and, you know, just the rest of their catalog too. I mean, you could reel off a bunch of Green Day tunes where, you know, Mike Dirnt's playing is prominently featured.
Yeah.
It's just, I think he's a great bass player and he came aboard one of the catchiest bass lines in history.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just had the good fortune of seeing them live for the first time back in September. And they headlined one of the nights at Louder Than Life. And I had never seen them before. Always liked Green Day. I wasn't the biggest Green Day fan, but I always, you know, dug their stuff. They put on one of the best rock shows I've seen in a very, very long time. And again, these are like older cats now. It's not like these guys are like 35. You know, they're up there running around, you know, just kicking ass for, like, I mean, they probably played for a good 2.5 hours, like, and with no filler, man, just hit after hit after hit, dragging kids up out of the crowd and letting them play guitar. And I mean, it was just, they were a lot of fun. Yeah. They were super clean. Their band sounded so tight. High energy show, put on just a great rock show, man. I was like, wow, no wonder these guys are, like, still huge, you know, after all these years. So yeah, I kind of wish I had, you know, gone to see them earlier, but glad I did. They were really, really good.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Hell
man.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to a band who never did drugs, I'm pretty sure. Motorhead.
Straight edge.
Yeah, totally straight edge. Lemmy never snorted or drank or smoked anything. Yeah, the song is Ace of Spades, man. Oof. I mean, it's from their 1980 album by the same name, Ace of Spades. And Lemmy Kilmister, just one of the most iconic people, let alone bass players, but just one of the most iconic people in rock and roll and heavy rock and roll. Or, you know, they never liked to be called heavy metal, or he didn't anyway, but he's like, we just play rock and roll. They just play it really loud and really fast. Lemmy's an icon, and his bass playing, again, talk about a signature sound. Nobody sounded like Lemmy. And that particular track, just that bass playing is just off the chain.
that's, you want to talk about an iconic track. I mean, yeah. Ace of Spades is that.
Yeah, another one of those bands that when I was younger, I never got the good fortune to see, but I did get to see them a couple times at least, you know, as an older fellow. And yeah.
I think we saw them together.
We probably did. We've been to many, yeah, many shows, but
And I remember this great quote from Lemmy, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was something to the effect of, like, we're the kind of band that if we moved in next door, your lawn's going to die.
Yep. And that was Lemmy, man. No apologies for anything, man. He was who he was. And again, a legend.
Yeah. Great bass player. And like you said, great signature sound. Yeah.
And that voice too. Yeah. Let's not forget about the voice. You talk about signature sound. I mean, man, it was created by Jack Daniels and Marlboro. I mean, but it worked. So there you go. That's our, our list of iconic bass lines.
Come on, Eric, say it.
I'm going to say it.
Come on, say it. Come on.
You're really going to make me say it?
Come on, let's do it. Come on.
Slapping the bass. You happy now?
Yes. That made my night, man.
Good. I'm here for you, man. But again, not saying the best bass lines. That's not what we do here. We just talk about what we think is iconic, what we think is cool. We both had really, really long lists coming into this, and we had to whittle them down because this episode could have been 5 hours long.
Yeah. I mean, I had to cut 10 to 15 off my list just to squeeze into this episode. Yeah.
Yeah. It was hard. It was hard to do. So when we have long lists like that, that, you know, leaves the door open to revisiting this topic again. So let us know what you think. If you thought it was cool, you dig slap into bass. See, I got another one in for you. Yeah. Let us know, man. We'll do it again.
Let's hit some shout outs before we get out of here. Cause we picked up a bunch of listeners around the world. So internationally, Israel, Philippines, checking in. Here in the U.S., Queens, Charlotte, Denver, San Jose, Modesto, Riverside, La Quinta, Ramona, Hackensack, New Jersey, Boston, San Antonio, Charleston, Columbus, Chicago, and coming in from Strong Island, Ron Konkama.
Nice, dude.
Yes.
And these are all new listeners. Well, thank you from the bottom of our black hearts.
All new. Yes. So everybody who continues to come back and check us out, and thank you to all the new listeners that have been checking us out. We appreciate you.
100%. Absolutely.
And then, check us out on the socials, Instagram at The Greatest Mixtape Podcast. Check us out on our YouTube channel, or you can email us thegreatestmixtapepodcast@gmail.com.
That's going to wrap it up for us. Thanks again so much for hanging out. Until next time, this is The Greatest Mixtape Podcast. I'm Eric.
And I am Mac.
And we're out of here. Thanks again.